Hello, and welcome to the Queen's Observatory Fast Radio Bursts. I am Connor Stone, here with my co-host, Nikhil Arora. It is our mission to bring exciting space news hot off the telescope and into your ears. One way or another, the Queen's Observatory has continued its practice of sharing the wonders of the universe since 1857. Thank you for joining us in this long-running tradition. Here at Fast Radio Bursts, we will answer your questions, interview astronomers, and dive deep into breaking research. From low Earth orbit to the clouds of Venus, from Betelgeuse to colliding black holes, it's a big universe to talk about, so let's get started. And welcome back. I'm Connor Stone, here with my co-host, Nikhil Arora. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Connor. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And very excited today because we're going to be starting a new series for the Fast Radio Bursts. We're going to be talking about the dangerous universe,
absolutely,
all the different things in the universe that can destroy each other. And we'll be starting with Earth.
Yeah, the Earth. What are the ways in space, not by humanity really, but in space, that can destroy the Earth?
That's the goal. That's what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. And then we're going to get bigger and bigger in scale and see where we go from there.
So the next episode will be how to destroy a star.
Yeah.
And then after that, it'll be how to destroy
galaxies.
A galaxy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the whole universe itself. How can we wreck it?
And you might not understand how to destroy the universe, but we'll get to that.
We will get to that. But yeah, before we get any further, we have to sort of apologize for being a week late on our regular episodes, but it's actually a good apology because Connor over here got married last week. So yeah, Connor, how does it feel to be married?
Feels pretty good. Wedding planning during COVID is a little, let's say, complicated.
Right.
But the wedding itself went off great, and
great.
We all had a lot of fun.
Yeah. So a huge congratulations to Connor, who is now officially married. But yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to space news.
Yeah.
There's not too much space news, but a couple neat things going on. First up, Percy, or Perseverance, has collected its first sample on Mars. So that's a big step towards doing its more detailed analysis, looking for life on Mars, looking for different geologic processes that happen on Mars. So it's really important. They had a few difficulties getting their samples.
Yeah.
But they got it working. All right. The second piece of space news is that there was smoke detected on the ISS. So astronauts smelled some smoke on the International Space Station. They're pretty sure it's coming from the Russian module.
Mm.
But more to be determined on that.
Yeah.
So
maybe, this just happened last night, right?
Yeah.
Almost
so maybe there will be more space news
with respect
for that,
next
time. Yeah.
But yeah, if it was something very big, we won't be the first person reporting this to you. You will hear it other places.
Yeah, if it becomes a really big thing, you'll hear it long before we talk about it.
Yep. Okay.
So that's all the space news we have for today. And I think we should move on to our main event. How to destroy the Earth. So this is the first episode in our Dangerous Universe series. And we're going to be talking about things that could happen to the Earth that would be cataclysmic, either ending all life on Earth or literally blowing
just
up the planet
the
itself.
Planet into bits.
Which would also end all life on Earth.
Sort of collateral damage there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our planet is really surrounded by a lot of dangerous things. Space is full of very energetic and dangerous things. Luckily for us, a lot of these dangerous things are far away.
Yeah, yeah.
But today we're going to talk about we're going to start by talking about how asteroids could really damage the Earth.
Yeah.
Asteroids are really nearby. In fact, asteroids are hitting the Earth all the time.
Yeah.
But before we get into a little more of the probabilities of these sorts of events, we should go right down to the basics and talk about what an asteroid is.
Yeah.
So, Nick, how about you explain what an asteroid is?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, asteroids, the way I like to call them, are essentially failed planets. So, our Earth, at one point in time, used to be an asteroid. So, early on, when our sun was just forming, so it was what we call a protostar, the sun had material, mainly gas, that would be around it. But the further away you got from the sun, the cooler things became, and you started having things like dust. So these would be like just carbon particles, silicates, or metals like iron, uranium, magnesium, and things like that. And so as the sun continued to form, the things around the sun started to actually cool down and come together because of gravity. And that's essentially what asteroids are. Asteroids are protoplanets. They're not planets. They're because they could never make it to becoming big enough, but they're protoplanets. So you go back 5 billion years ago, which is when the sun was formed, and you compare the solar system back then to now, you would see a lot more things orbiting the sun compared to now, which is really just the asteroid belts and 8 to 9 planets, if you think about it.
Well, when we look at early solar systems that are just forming around in our galaxy, they almost look like a disk of dust.
Exactly, yeah. And so that disk of dust cools down and comes together to form planets. Basically, what happened was, because there was so much stuff, as we talked about, there was disk of dust, and that cools down to become planets or protoplanets. Earlier on, because there were so many of them, these protoplanets would collide together. I think that's the sort of leading theory of how we got the moon to be around the Earth as well. There was a collision earlier on, and that is a chunk of the Earth, or what used to be the Earth at that point in time. You collide and you create more sort of rubble, more smaller rocks, and that's what asteroids are. Asteroids are essentially sort of remnants of early planet formation or early star formation.
So as these asteroids grow by bumping into each other, how should we visualize them?
Yes, okay. So most of them are not, so you think about our planet, most of them are not circular. They're just irregular shapes just hurling through space. There are two kinds of asteroids or meteors that we can find. One of them is called a rubble pile, which are essentially created because of collisions earlier on in the formation of the solar system, and because of gravity, these just small pieces of rock just stick together and stay combined. But the other ones, and if you've ever come to the Queen's Observatory or here in Kingston, we've actually shown you this, are essentially just solid cores of iron or heavy metals. These would be early planets from which the silicates and the carbons got wiped off, and they're essentially just, and then they just cool down, and then they continue to orbit the sun.
So those are the two sort of basic categories of asteroids, ones that are sort of cohesive holes and ones that are rubble piles barely held together by their weak gravity.
Yeah.
Of course, astronomers love to label things, so if you really want to get into the weeds, there's dozens of different subtypes.
Absolutely,
of
yes.
Asteroids.
But these are the two general types of asteroid, for sure.
Right. So now we have an idea of what the asteroids look like.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about where you can find them. So if you want to go asteroid hunting, where is your best place to look?
Well, look up in space. That's what I say. No. So in the solar system, we have something called an asteroid belt, which is mainly situated between Mars and Jupiter. There are reasons for that because of Jupiter's gravity. A lot of interaction has essentially pushed the asteroid belt to be there. And there are like millions of rocks just roaming around in there. So that's the main asteroid belt. However, surprisingly, there's also, and at this point we know of about maybe 10,000, 20,000 objects that are between Mars and Earth. So there is an actual sub-belt or a secondary belt of asteroids between Mars and Earth. These are called near-Earth objects, and these are monitored heavily. So last year, when we had the Neowise comet, that was 2020, right? Yeah. So last year when we had the Neowise comet come in and we were able to see it, it was labeled as a near-Earth object. So it was being monitored and we were able to see it. So just think about the Neowise, which was a comet, which are slightly different from asteroids. There are thousands of more stuff between Earth and Mars that needs heavy monitoring for sure when it comes to our topic here today, Connor.
All right, so a lot of the asteroids are found between Mars and Jupiter,
yeah.
But you can really find them at just about any orbit. as long as it's a stable orbit around the sun.
Yeah.
Any unstable orbit, since the solar system is billions of years old, the unstable orbits would have gone away at this point and either crashed into the sun or got kicked out of the solar system. Yeah.
Or got crashed into a planet.
So, yes. And something to think about with these asteroids is the speed that they're moving.
Yeah.
So something 10 kilometers across seems pretty destructive if you dropped that on your house.
Yep.
But it's hard to imagine how much chaos it would actually create if it landed on Earth, because it's not just dropping down.
No.
It's moving at several kilometers per second, at least 11, but often up at like 30 kilometers per second.
Yeah.
And at those speeds, keep in mind, a lot of bullets travel at around a third of a kilometer per second, or maybe up to 1 kilometer per second.
Exactly. So it's just a giant supersonic bullet headed towards you, really.
Yeah, so this mountain is moving way beyond, like easily 10 times faster than a bullet.
Yeah,
That's how it creates a lot of damage.
Exactly.
Let's start with, what if it's just 10 meters wide?
Yeah.
Or maybe a few tens of meters wide. Yeah. How does that look if an asteroid that size hits the Earth?
Right. So that will really cause minimal damage. So we can take the example of the Chelyabinsk meteor that hit Russia in 2013. So it's in the southern eastern part of Russia where a meteor in 2013 hit, and it was only 20 meters across. And if you talk to the people who actually witnessed it, what they would tell you was there was a bright streak across the sky. It was during the day that this happened, but there was a bright streak across the sky, and that was it. But 90 seconds later, a sonic boom arrived because of the impact, which is what caused damage. So a lot of the people, I think with the smaller asteroids, even though they're not going to wipe out the Earth, the issue is that people don't, because of the way they enter the atmosphere, which is a bright streak across the sky, no sound at all, and that's it for a while. People get interested, so they actually just look out their windows and things like that. And then a few seconds later, the sonic boom of the impact on the Earth arrives, and then you essentially have glass stuck in your face for a while.
Yeah, the sonic boom is powerful enough to easily shatter glass, knock items over.
Yeah, so that Chelyabinsk meteor took out a few buildings. It was big enough.
And directly below, like at the impact site, Chelyabinsk in particular exploded in the air. It didn't
make it
to the ground.
Yeah.
But even still, the area below it, all the trees were flattened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just from the sonic boom, let alone actually being hit if this thing had made it to the ground.
Exactly.
So that's just
a small one.
Just a small one.
Tiny one. Yeah.
And meteors like this are not uncommon.
No,
they happen fairly frequently.
Yes.
It's just usually they don't occur over top of populated areas.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you move up the scale of size, that's when things become uncommon and more dangerous, I would say.
Yeah, so there's hundreds of meteors hitting us all the time that are tiny little grains of sand, essentially.
Yeah, we think about the Perseid meteor shower that just happened in August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the size of Chelyabinsk is not uncommon, but it certainly isn't happening all the time.
It's the size of a bus, so just keep in mind. 20 meters, size of a couple buses put together.
Yeah. And then as we scale up, they get more and more rare.
Right.
So what about a 10-kilometer rock?
Yeah, we have no chance there. I think the chance of a 10-kilometer rock happening is very small. I think it's what we think. If you were to live 100 years, the chance of you encountering a 10-kilometer rock headed towards you from the space is like 1 in a million kind of thing.
Well, that makes sense because it was a few million years ago that one hit the dinosaurs.
Yeah, that exactly. And we expect one to hit Earth one every 100 million years or something like that.
More or less.
More or less, yeah. So 10-kilometer rock is really, it's a very, let's say, unique event. But if that happens, that, as you can imagine, that took away the dinosaurs completely from the Earth. Not just the place where it hit, but from the other side of the Earth too. And that's because when a 10-kilometer rock comes and hits the planet, a lot of things are put up in the sky. So a lot of rubble and debris is just launched up in the sky. And because 10 kilometers is big enough, that actually launches things really far high. But Earth is still Earth. It's still much bigger than 10 kilometers. So it'll actually pull back that debris onto itself and also on behind itself. So what happens is it's sort of a mushroom kind of effect where a hit happens, debris goes up, but then because of the Earth's gravity, it's actually dragged back onto the Earth as well, on the other side, causing real damage.
Yeah, and the debris cloud can essentially blanket the entire Earth.
So yeah, that was the problem. What happened was the asteroid hit, and the initial thing that happens on the Earth is the temperature of the Earth goes up. So the only organisms, the only animals that were able to survive were the ones which were deep in caves or underwater, maybe.
Or mammals, which burrowed into the ground.
Yeah, burrowed into the ground. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And then, to make it even worse, after increasing the temperature, the cloud of material stays in the atmosphere and actually blocks incoming sunlight for a while.
Yeah.
So you end up with everything getting cold after getting super hot.
Yeah.
So it's just not a fun time.
It's a massive. It'll take out the Earth. However, that said, 10 kilometers is still small. We can talk about what will it take to destroy the Earth, like break it into pieces. And I did that calculation, and it'll take about 9,000-kilometer-wide asteroid to break Earth into pieces.
For reference, the Earth itself is about 12,000 kilometers across.
Yeah. So yeah, you need like a quarter of it.
So it needs to be
three quarters, rather.
Nearly the size of Earth. Yeah.
Yeah. So one-on-one collision.
So going back to the 10-kilometer rock.
Yeah.
That would be truly catastrophic, and we would like to avoid that sort of situation.
Yeah.
So, what can be done to prevent an asteroid from hitting the Earth, assuming that we have the organization and the willpower?
There are about a few different ways we have thought to be able to survive that. Most of them don't really completely work out very nicely, but let's actually try and go through them. So the first one is if an asteroid was headed towards us, we could just nuke it. That was the plot line of Armageddon, right? We could just go ahead and plant a nuclear bomb on it and blow it up. However, we have to be very careful because that might save the humanity, but it will still cause enough damage. Because remember, we might nuke it and it might break into pieces, but depending on how far away it is from us, the gravity of the asteroid or the individual pieces might kick in again, and the asteroid will reform as a rubble pile again. So what you have done, if it's not already a rubble pile, in which case you're just in a loop there, what you have done is you've broken the asteroids into multiple pieces which form together again, and it will hit. Or if the asteroid is close enough and we nuke it, it might break up, but then shrapnel will rain down on Earth for a while, which is going to be a much more chaotic, much more stochastic process leading to a lot of damage. So that's the preliminary idea. It doesn't always work out. Worked out for Armageddon, the movie, but in reality, it might not work out as much.
Something that they don't really fully explain in Armageddon, and which is a little tricky to wrap your mind around, is these asteroids are moving fast.
Yeah.
Really, really, really fast. So even a nuclear explosion in the center might not push all the pieces away
far enough
to stop them from still hitting Earth. Because even with a nuclear explosion in the center of this asteroid, most of its velocity is still the velocity it had from the beginning.
Yep.
Not the extra kick
that it got
sideways that it got from the nuclear bomb.
Right. Absolutely. So now the next thing that pops up, and that I think is one of my favorite ideas. It seems like a very hard thing to accomplish, but this is the process of something called a gravity tractor. I'm going to explain it, but I'm also going to do a plug over here. There's actually a TV show on Netflix called Salvation, where the plot line is essentially that an asteroid is headed towards us in 200 days or something, and we have to prevent it from hitting us. So if you're looking for a TV show, science fiction-y, go check it out. So anyways, a gravity tractor is a cool thing where you essentially launch a rocket, and that rocket hooks up to the asteroid itself. And because of the propellers, because of the engine of the rocket, it actually pushes the rocket in a different direction compared to the direction of the Earth. And you change the trajectory of the rocket itself, the asteroid itself, hopefully missing the planet then.
That would be the goal. Yeah. But you have to catch it really early.
Yeah, you have to catch it really early. Two, you need a very, very powerful rocket to be able to do that. And three, and I think this is the hardest part, is if you attach yourself to the asteroid, then you're rotating with the asteroid itself, because the asteroid most likely is going to be rotating. So you have to figure out how to continue to push it in one direction and not just average out overall space, because the asteroid is rotating while it's coming towards us.
Yeah, most asteroids do rotate. Yeah. At some speed, maybe rotate every few hours, yeah, or every day or so.
Yeah, so that's the only sort of hiccup over here, which is a big hiccup, might I just add, because the technology has not been invented yet. So yeah, if a 10-kilometer rock was headed our way, we're probably done for. But the good thing is, we know of most of the 10-kilometer behemoths that are roaming around near the Earth, and none of them crosses paths with the Earth, at least for the next 100 years or so.
Yes, and an advantage of the larger asteroids is that they are harder to miss.
Exactly. And now finally, the last one, and I think this is my favorite one, and this is maybe the most hopeful one if we can come up with the technology, is something called reflective sheets. So these asteroids are very dark, so they're very hard to see. But if somehow we were able to travel to the asteroid and put large amounts of reflective sheets on them, the light from the sun would actually put pressure on the asteroid, swaying it from its initial trajectory. This is something called, I know it's a little bit crazy, because you turn on lights in your house and you don't feel any pressure from it. But remember, we're talking about the sun and not just a 100-watt bulb in your house. If we were able to make it reflective enough, there would be enough pressure, or there'd be enough force of the sun's light that will change its orbit.
I think it'd be pretty great to save humanity with a can of white paint.
Exactly. Yeah, paint the asteroid white. Exactly. That's right. So yeah, those are some of the few ways we have to save ourselves from the asteroid if a 10-kilometer behemoth was headed our way, or a 1-kilometer boulder was headed our way. Really, the idea is the same. However, as I said, the technology for most of them is non-existent right now. I think the biggest investment here, and maybe I'll end it on a positive note, the asteroid part at least, the biggest investment that we can do over here is to actually put up telescopes that can actually track or observe these asteroids over a long period of time. So the more time we put on telescopes to actually just look at these asteroids, the more confident we will be, essentially, when it comes to one of them coming towards us.
All right. Another thing we should probably do.
Yep. But yeah, I will say, no need to worry about it. There are many things just on the planet, as the current climate might suggest, that can wipe us out compared to an asteroid.
Okay, and I think that's a good place to leave it for now. We're going to go for our break, and when we come back, we're going to see what the sun can do.
Yeah.
All right.
Hello there. I'm just stopping by to quickly let you know that the Queen's Observatory is always here to answer your space questions. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and our website. Links to all of these are in the podcast description. We're always happy to talk about the universe, and if you ask a really big question, we just might have to do a podcast about it. I would also like to mention some of the other great resources out there. In the podcast description, you will find links to the McDonald Institute, the Royal Astronomical Society, and the Astronomy on Tap program. They are all excellent programs to bring the universe down to Earth. And with that, let's get back to it.
And welcome back. So, we've talked about how an asteroid could wipe out life on Earth, but what about, like, really destroying the Earth? That's kind of what we came here for.
Yep.
So let's build up to that and talk about the sun.
Yeah.
So the sun is sort of the main object in our solar system. It dominates everything else going on around it.
Uh-huh.
all the material of Earth could fit into the sun a million times over, and there'd be room left to spare. So this thing's big, and it's bright. We all know it's bright.
Yeah, it allows for life to happen on Earth.
Exactly. So how can the sun destroy the Earth?
Right. Cool. There are really two ways for this to happen. The first one is, as you just pointed out, how big the sun is. And it's essentially an engine creating energy. So if we were to somehow utilize all of that energy, we could really destroy the Earth. And then the next one is, and we're going to briefly touch upon it here and then go deeper into it the next episode, because that's where we're talking about slaying the sun, is going to be the death of the sun or the death of stars in general. So these are the two ways that the sun could really destroy the Earth. There are also solar flares, which are essentially flinging of sun's material towards the planet. However, that cannot have enough strength to really destroy the planet. It can take out all of the electronics on the planet. It can cause damage, human lives damage, but it cannot kill us.
So let's start small.
Right.
The solar flares. Those can't really wipe out life on Earth.
No.
But there are fairly common, and by fairly common I mean every 100 or 200 years, solar flares that could wipe out all the electronics on Earth.
Yes.
So how does that work?
Well, okay. The solar flare is essentially the material of sun, or particles from the sun, had it fling towards us. So we know that the sun is just a bright ball of plasma, but that bright ball of plasma is also magnetic. There is a magnetic field attached to the sun. The sun is essentially just a giant magnet. And every now and then, because of the way the magnetic field on the sun or the way the magnets on the sun essentially work, that field sort of intersects, or that field interacts in a way that it flings out a lot of material towards us. And that material not only contains like actual elements, but also charged particles. And these charged particles then just rush towards the Earth, and then they interact with, these are very high energy particles, and then they interact with our electronics and wipe them out, essentially.
So electronics essentially work by moving electrons along wires. But the sun can just fling charged particles, including electrons, out at the Earth, essentially making the space between the sun and the Earth a giant space wire.
To some extent, yes.
And that space wire can basically shower the Earth in moving charged particles. Which, if those moving charged particles line up with an actual wire here on Earth in your electronics, well, now you've got much higher current running through that wire than it really ever should have.
Yes, absolutely. And I should add that this thing happens very often. There's not only the sun creating these charged particles, but they're just raining down on us from the universe itself, from the death of stars. We're going to talk about death of stars next time around. This is already happening. But the only reason why we're talking about solar flare specifically is because, one, they're just so close to us, and two, just the volume of charged particles that can come to us is what can be concerning.
Yes. So you really could destroy all the electronics on Earth with this sort of event. There was a similar one back in the 1800s where they only had telegraph lines, but the telegraph lines were sparking and bursting into flames.
Right.
Our electronics these days are even more sensitive.
Yes.
And more prolific. So it could be quite disastrous, but not Earth-ending.
No. Not human life-ending.
Human life-ending.
Well, there would be some chaos, I will say that.
There would certainly be some chaos. So stepping up, now let's talk about the energy from the sun.
Right.
So obviously the sun directs its energy in all directions in space.
Yes.
But if that energy was pointed towards Earth, what kind of damage would we be looking at?
Really take out the Earth. Just imagine the Death Star from Star Wars, maybe, which was essentially just firing a big laser towards planets. And if that happens, what ends up happening is the planet getting destroyed. That's the same thing. If by any means all of the energy from the sun was able to just come towards us, we would be done in about a year or so. Cooked. The planet would be cooked and broken apart into pieces in about a year or so.
All right.
Yeah.
So
maybe we should just go a little deeper into why that happens.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think I pointed out this before. The sun is essentially a giant nuclear bomb, or many millions of nuclear bombs put together. Inside the core of the sun is basically hydrogen, but inside the core of the sun, there is a process called nuclear fusion happening, where you essentially take two atoms of hydrogen and you combine them together to make helium. That's how elements in the universe are made. And so if you want to go on our YouTube page, Connor has a really great talk about how the elements, all the elements in the universe, we're talking gold, iron, copper, think about it, are actually made in the universe. That's how helium is made. Helium is made in the core of stars. However, this process really is very energetic. It creates a lot of energy. And now imagine doing it quadrillions of times. And that's how the sun essentially generates the energy. And what we're trying to say over here is, if ever the sun was able to, in some ways or another, point out or point all of its energy towards us, we would be able to
We would evaporate the Earth.
Yes, yeah. So there are about 10 to the 18 nuclear bombs going off every second in the core of the sun.
Yeah, to give you a bit of scale, the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, yeah, they converted less than a gram of matter into energy.
Right.
The sun is regularly converting hundreds of tons of matter every second into energy.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yep, that's quite a bit of energy coming towards us. And that would cook the sun, or the Earth rather, into pieces.
So at this point we've talked about how all the electronics on Earth could be destroyed, or if someone could magically redirect all the energy of the sun towards the Earth, we could cook it and basically evaporate our Earth. But no one's going to create a giant mirror.
Well, fingers crossed there's no Darth Vader waiting out there for us.
Okay, fingers crossed no one's going to make a giant mirror and bake the Earth with the sun. So is there something that really could happen or really will happen that could destroy the Earth?
Yeah, absolutely. The sun itself, at the end of sun's life, there are events that happen that can actually destroy the Earth. So let's take a tour, shall we? It's the year 2021 today. Go about another 5 billion years into the future.
The year 5 billion 2021?
Yep, exactly. Give or take a few million years. The sun's now reached towards the end of its life. It's become an old star and it's going to die. And how it's going to die is what is going to really, is what can destroy the Earth. Now, the sun is a star that we consider a small star, a dwarf star, might I just add. There are bigger stars out there, and towards the end of their lives, they go supernova, they go boom, which can destroy things as well. But this, in sun's case, the sun, as it grows older and older, it's happening right now as well, it's going to get bigger and bigger. The way nuclear fusion works within the center, the core of the sun, is it generates enough energy to push material out as well.
Now, the fusion going on right now is fusing hydrogen into helium.
Yes.
But as the sun progresses, it's going to run out of that hydrogen.
And then it's going to start fusing helium together to form carbon and nitrogen and oxygen. So these three this will continue while it's making things. And I think the last thing the sun will form is silicon. So it's going to continue to fuse things together, and it's going to continue to grow in size. And about 5 billion years from now, it's going to be big enough that it's going to engulf Mercury, Venus, and Earth, taking away the planet, essentially.
So it's strange to think about the sun growing in size.
Right.
It seems so stable to us right now, and it will be stable for billions of years to come.
Absolutely.
But really, all stars are a titanic balance of gravity that's incredibly strong.
Yes.
And the nuclear fusion outputting
energy. The energy created because of the nuclear fusion, yes. It's essentially it's a tightrope balance. Anything goes anywhere else and things just go haywire. If gravity becomes too big, which is we're going to talk about this in terms of supernova. The star would explode if the pressure becomes, or the energy from the nuclear fusion becomes too big. The star just continues to keep growing and growing and growing until it just becomes a little small gas cloud.
So yeah, when the sun transitions from hydrogen to fusing heavier elements,
yeah,
it also starts producing more energy.
Right.
And so it begins to grow. It doesn't add any new material.
No.
All it does is sort of puff up like,
yes,
a balloon.
Exactly.
If you put a balloon in your freezer, it'll actually get smaller. If you, yeah, put it in an oven, it'll briefly get larger, and then
before
it'll pop.
Pops.
The same thing's happening with the sun.
Yeah.
It's getting hotter, essentially, and,
yeah,
expanding.
Yeah.
And the amount that it expands is incredible, enough to envelop the Earth.
Exactly. And that's going to, well, it's going to start by, it's going to be big enough that it takes in Mercury and Venus, which are closer to the sun, of course. And then it's going to be big enough to evaporate. Well, actually, it's going to get hot enough to really take off humanity and all life from the planet. And then the sun's going to be big enough that the energy from the sun is essentially just going to wipe it out into pieces.
Yeah. Now, there will be a brief period where the Earth will actually be inside the sun.
Yes.
But still a whole rock, just, exactly, completing its orbits, because,
yeah,
the sun is expanding, but it's not adding any new material.
No material, yeah.
So it'll be very faint and wispy, and,
yeah,
the Earth could continue on its orbit inside the sun.
Yeah. Let me point out, just a rock, no water. It's too hot by then.
No water. It would be a barren,
exactly,
rock.
Yeah.
But it would be able to continue orbiting for a while.
Yeah.
Slowly spiraling down until it falls into,
yes,
a more intense part of the sun.
Exactly. Which will just break it into pieces.
And there you have it. We've got asteroids that could wipe out towns, cities, countries, or just wipe off all of the large life on the planet. We've got solar flares that could wipe out all of our electronics.
Yeah.
If someone were to build a giant mirror, you could wipe out the Earth.
Yeah.
And we know for sure that at some point in the future, the sun is going to destroy the Earth.
The Earth. Yep. Absolutely.
And that is how you destroy the Earth. I think that's a good point to end off for our episode today. And,
yeah,
at the next episode, we're going to kick it up a notch and talk about how to destroy the sun, or really just a star.
Exactly.
How do you destroy a star?
Yeah.
That's all from us for today, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. We hope you enjoyed this walk through the universe. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us via email at queensuobservatory@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter as the Queen's University Observatory to stay up to date. If you like this podcast, you can help us by leaving a review and sharing it with your friends. This will help us become more visible and spread the wonders of the universe to more people. That is all from us. We'll be back again with another exciting topic in astronomy.